to Tapped Into Psychedelics. I'm your host, Adam Tapp, and with me is my friend and producer, Handsome Jason. And today we are going to be interviewing a very interesting person, Luke Van Polge. And he is the founder and CEO of Psychedelic Insights. He's also a Royal Netherlands Marine Corps veteran and a psychedelic entrepreneur. How you doing, Luke?
I'm good. How are you?
Thanks
for having me.
Yeah, no, man. You know, we've been talking back and forth and trying to arrange this, and you have a busy life, obviously, with what you're doing. So, you know,
I think you're the first and furthest guest that we've had on this podcast, which is excellent.
Yeah, we've been staying relatively local, so we've decided to expand our reach transatlantic.
We've gone international, baby.
Yeah.
Right.
So, Luke, how about we just sort of very briefly, we'll just touch on the fact that, you know, your company, Psychedelic Insights, just give a very brief description of what it is, and we'll get back into it later on. But I'd really like to hear more about you and how you got to this place and who you are.
Psychedelic Insights, it's a company I own. And we define what we do as the psychological guidance of psychedelic experiences. So in the Netherlands, we have the psilocybin truffle, which is a legal natural psychedelic. And the government sees it as food. And if people want to consume this for personal development or deeper insights or spiritual development, we can provide this service and really provide the setting for people. So we see people from all over the world who can have a safe, legal, well-prepared session and enjoy the aftercare that is still very much so important to those processes.
Was it 2007 or something in the Netherlands that psilocybin mushrooms became illegal, and then psilocybin truffle sort of made its way in the sclerota of the mycelium, and then that has a significantly lesser amount of psilocybin, but yet obviously psilocybin is psychoactive, and so you can still have these really profound experiences as much as with psilocybin convincing mushroom.
Yeah, that is true, I think. I think it was about 2008, I think I recall. But the first time I ever consumed it, and I didn't even know what I was doing, you could still buy dried mushrooms. And later they made that illegal. And then there was a period that you could only sell fresh mushrooms. So then they had to decide the way to keep mushrooms fresh. And they get them into shops. And then later, they made those illegal. So really the fruit of the fungi, which is the mushroom. Mm-hmm. But the loophole was that they never mentioned the mycelium or the truffles.
And so that's how that sort of escaped persecution of the drug war. That kind of makes sense.
Exactly, So we're very happy with that. But and the strange thing is that the government sees it as food. You know, so relatively, it's really available. There are hardly any incidents, but for people seeking to do really some sort of close soul searching, or now there's like in the newspapers that it works for depression, like natural mushrooms. And people are cautioning the public, you know, not to dive in. And of course, this is very much so. So it's always a very dynamic environment in which we live. It's unique. It's also very vulnerable. And so being an entrepreneur of a psychedelic business, that's what happened if we come here.
It's probably been a labor of love for you to do this for people. And, seeing perhaps a change of the times and turning this into an economic enterprise is, you know, it's a great thing. So one thing I do want to talk about with you is just, you know, I always have this really interesting idea of how people got to where they were. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd imagine you've been on a very windy, windy road to end up in this position where you're providing psilocybin to veterans, first responders, and people in the general public. So do you want to give us some background on how you ended up in this position specifically?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it started. It started when I was still having a sort of mainstream job. I was working in startups. I mostly came in when they had financing, and I decided for mostly online businesses, you know, what their products should do, how all the functionality should work, how they should make their money, all this stuff. That was my career for a long time. But things weren't really able developing in a way that's really low, making me very happy. And at one point, someone had a talk with me, and it was about ayahuasca actually. And I never heard any positive drug story, you know, like I was quite naive about it. And to remember that it's quite interesting, of course. I know now my whole world is psychedelic world. But back then, I was quite unaware and I was quite fascinated. So I really dove in. And ultimately, I had an experience that really changed my life that was completely difficult. And just to actually integrate the experience, because it was without integration services. Yeah, I had the luck and the wealth, I guess, to take off, literally. You know, I stopped my career. I stepped on my sailing yacht and sailed to the Caribbean just to clear my mind and process what I had experienced. So then search started.
Well, out of curiosity, where did you do the ayahuasca? Was it in Central America, South America,
no,
or was it a European venue?
Yeah, it was in Amsterdam, actually. Yeah.
So out of curiosity, and I know this is a difficult thing to quantify, you know, verbalizing about a psychedelic experience at the best of times is difficult. You know, can you tell me a little bit about your ayahuasca experience? You know, did you have the characteristic animals? Was it kaleidoscopic? Was it very introspective? Was it?
Yeah. I felt like I was in different movies and different scenes to deal with different topics. So I saw myself out of the eyes of my ex now, you know, being a dick, basically. You know, and it's like, you know, then you just feel it. You just get repulsed by your own behaviors, and that it's so unnecessary. And, you know, so I had some real confrontational experiences in there. A lot of stuff had to do with control. So that was almost laughed away as though I would have control. And I remember then all of a sudden, yeah, I felt I was on the beach. I was literally on the beach with my sitting in the water. And I had a perspective on myself. And I had really the sense of reality that I was really there. But I knew I had to hit the water. And I had to hit the water so many times that I wasn't allowed to stop for me here and the victim here. And that I had to let go of all my rage and all my anger in that sort of scene. It felt absolutely real. So like the biggest part of that enormous experience was really the last part, which was this like an internal dialogue, you know, between the ego mind. But it was a convincing thing that love is always the answer. And so I would come up in this dialogue about special circumstances or exceptions or, you know, and I had to relive it all the time. Every time I used to come up with something, and until I had this deep surrender that it must be true, you know, I had this like mind-blowing experience.
It's funny, like I know what you mean about the idea of having to convince yourself it's okay to be okay. Like it's this really wild series of events, you know, psychologically for us to be convinced of the fact that we are truly okay and then actually internalize that. And now, do you think that your experiences in the military, like did that play an impact in this? Because, you know, I know that being a paramedic, you have all these experiences, and that internalizes itself, I find, in a very negative way. You know what I mean? Like, was the whole thing just sort of your entire experience of letting go in general, or was it sort of co-related?
Yeah, I think like when you're in your line of work with like with paramedics or like any first line responder, I think you're wired to be in control and on top of things, and to create all of those chaos. Yeah, so you're literally on top and not part of. You know, so I think that the training that goes with that and experiences that go with that also require you to be very rigid. So there's strength to it, and there's order in chaos. So it's functional when you're drilled. I know the pressure, but I think that black and white list in the neurology, you know, works well in the right environment. But I think in normal life, that might be causing a lot of conflict or unnecessary harm to conflict. But this we saw with the veterans as well, that a lot of them had very unpleasant divorces, resulting in them not seeing their kids. Right? So in that sense, I see the military path, and not necessarily experiences of conflict or war, play a role in people suffering, you know, every day.
Yeah, so, no, so I think I can
compound on that PTSD conditions or depression conditions.
Yeah, I think I can relate to that idea of, you know, you said something very significant about making order out of chaos and trying to be in control of things. And it's funny how you stated the notion of black and white, how we have a tendency to view things in that way because it simplifies. But the unfortunate reality is that nothing is black or white. Everything is a profoundly complicated shade of gray, which is a very difficult thing to navigate through. And, you know, part of, I think, my psychedelic experience, and maybe yours as well, is this, like you said, is that understanding that everything is complicated. There's a million sides to every single story. And the idea of just simply taking a stance based on idealism and ideological principle is an emotionally destructive thing, I think.
Yes. I think, there need to be built more bridges between every lot of communities, you know, also with the renaissance of the psychedelics, you know. So I'll give you an example, you know, like the situation that we operate in, you know, you can be completely unqualified, unexperienced, and not know what you do, and you can run a legal business like mine. Thank God there are not many, you know, but that's the situation. At the same time, you know, I've had doctors and psychiatrists and official psychologists risk being reprimanded while working with perfectly legal truffle in a legal framework. You know, so there I see a lot of bay, you know, between those two worlds. Same as doing research, you know, on the actual troubles. The government is also researching FDMA for veterans, and that is really, really great. And they're researching psilocybin, and obviously that's really, really great. But very little research is going to what is actually available on the streets, you know, no like troubles.
So how did you get inspired to set up this retreat? Like, you know, I don't know if someone just wakes up one day and decides to do this, or maybe you did, but, you know, you've set this up. Was it primarily to support veterans, or did it just sort of work into that because of your background?
Yeah, it was really like way out, like 20 years after I left the Marine Corps, that I got back in touch with a couple of the old world, you know. And what I had never had on my radar was that there were so many people that had emotional wounds and a lot of difficulty and suffering. And there are a lot of them were on pensions, you know, for mental injury like PTSD. And it had never occurred to me. I was not living there. Although, you know, with retrospect, you know, I've I've also done have done a lot of healing, because what you build up in that type of world is a lot of defensive patterns, you know, also socially and also for fun, you know. But yeah, they work in one environment very, very well, and that's why people feel really, really connected, you know, and ever since the brotherhood. But on the other hand, it really handicaps you when you go into civilian life. And then, you know, first, if you have the, if you're not black and white, you know, you want to sit with the color gray and see how it resonates. You know, for people that are used to getting instructions, you know, like it can be very threatening. It can be very unsafe, you know, life after the military.
So what does basically your company look like? You have a team of people, you have locations sort of in the country. You know, how does this work? Like, obviously you put the effort into it, and, you know, I've gone through your webpage. I've talked to you before. I've read all the reviews about it. Like, you have legitimate therapies, integration coaches, you know, this isn't like a fly by night thing. You've put the thought into it. And how does this work? So let's just say that I'm a first responder or a veteran or just a member of the public that wants to get involved with this. So how does this start? Like, what does it look like?
Yeah, interesting. Like most people that contact us, they have done a lot of research. You know, some over a year, some half a year, some a couple of weeks. So the only thing we offer on the website is, you know, try to be as transparent as we can, and then try to get in touch with people. So to book an actual call, like a video call. And then you'll actually get to speak to, sometimes me, but most of the time now, one of the other trip guides for the people that are actually doing the work and seeing all these flyers. So you get to, you know, ask all the questions. But we'll explain really how the process goes. And if people think that, for instance, you know, they come to get rid of a depression, you know, we like to advise them to also see, you know, if there's any the trauma that has been there in the past, and explain how the medicine works, so that you can go there safely, you know, and set a right intention and really frame it from a therapeutical point of view. So, and then we supply the people that have been in the intro call with an information email. And if they want to proceed, then they can book another call for the intention, and that is mostly planned with the two guides. So you get to meet more people of the team, because the FaceTime is really, really important. Because what we really need to do is invest in the relationship, so you feel really trusted. So when you're actually on the session day, you know, you have a warm connection and a sense of safety. If you feel like, you know, the wounded inner child is there, you know, everyone responds differently. So we really, through lack of a center and a longer time and all the restrictions that we have, these calls are really, really important for the preparation. And then on the day itself, we have a couple of locations that we love to use. One of them really provides you with like a tiny house. In a more natural setting, and it's run like a hotel, so that's really ideal. And there you have enough privacy, and all of these houses have all hotels and sauna. And there we visit the client all the day. Obviously, we bring truffles, but we also bring music with it curated list, and then we go over, you know, the whole journey of the client. Whatever they want to address, you know, that is being discussed, what they want to let go, what they want to gain from the experience. And we'll also address the sacredness of the session as well. You know, so we like to also place it in the context that, you know, psychedelics have been used by the Egyptians, the Tibetans, the Celts, the Mayas, the Aztecs, the Greeks, and many others. So there's a sense of, you know, sincerity. And And then yeah, we drink the tea, and then we make the nest, and then people get comfortable, and we put on the music, and the music really plays. It starts with a guided meditation, but it's followed by music, and that lasts as long as the trip or longer. And the sessions really last about 5 hours, sometimes 4, sometimes 6, but mostly around 5. And yeah, then we're there, obviously, for people, and everyone's trip is always different. So the support can be really, really, really important for some people, because yeah, people like to think it's just psychological. It's very much so philosophical. You know, some people see the birth of the universe, you know, and they didn't know what to expect.
It leads to like existential crisis in certain people. You know what I mean? Like, there's one thing that I find interesting is that people, you know, psychedelics are becoming more and more, you know, mainstream. And I say that statement loosely, but people are getting this sort of very superficial idea of what it is, and people associate it perhaps with cannabis or something. And then you get into this moment. And like you said, you know, I know exactly what you're talking about when you're seeing the birth of the universe and these deep existential moments that make you question who and what you are and your place in the universe. Like it's very important that these things are stated. Yeah. One other thing too, is that how many people generally, so if one person is having the ceremony, they're experiencing a psilocybin trip, how many people are there as well providing support and guidance during this?
We always work in teams of two, always a male, female team. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So, you know, and now that we've just talked about, you know, seeing the universe and so forth, you know, one thing that you guys offer, and I think this is fantastic, is the integration.
Yeah.
You know, so for our viewers and stuff, what is integration and why is it relevant?
Yeah, well, we just touched up on it. And that the philosophical part, even, you know, and that goes hand in hand with the spiritual part, because if you just think it's a story, and then you experience these things, and it feels so incredibly real, but then yeah, your little view needs some adjusting, and that can affect a lot of deeper layers, you know. So there can be a lot of at work. Say you've had an unsafe childhood, you know, with an angry parent. With maybe abuse, you know, the mechanisms of the healing of trauma is you know, there are parallels there with everyone, you know, within psychedelic. So you feel a sense of openness and you feel a sense of safety. And then you can do what is normally counterintuitive, and that is really go to the pain, go to the feeling. Because all your mechanisms of who you really are and how you act are the unhealed traumas. They are still up to these defenses. And then, you know, through seeing it, yeah, that's the magic of the mushroom, I guess. You know, you get a personal method for to change the perspective on it, which is really pivotal in how you emotionally experience it, or the sort of trigger is different than the effect is different. And somehow through these perspective change, you can feel different. You can see it as if there's 10 people in a row and I walk by with my dog, 10 people will have a different emotional response and it will be a different chemical release. You know, that it's the brain that chooses that, configured that way. So we'll have, you know, cortisol that one will away, so we'll become angry and adrenaline. You know, so we'll want the pet to have oxytocin. So we'll feel for the dog and have serotonin. You know, so well, there's a lot of chemicals that have a role to play in how we feel. And I think, yeah, psychedelics can allow you a moment of clarity, and it can have a real spiritual component, and it will change your sense of what reality is. So that really requires the integration. So for most people, that is sometimes, you know, that is a dialogue with a parent that you have internally. You know, it feels very, very real, you know, so I don't even want to call it imagination, but it is part of those protests that we see a lot, you know, so then there is forgiveness, a reconciliation, you know, and then people can really, it really affects how people feel about themselves, you know, so it's been being an entrepreneur and then providing the service and finding really the best people to do it. Has been very different from any other business that I ran or know of.
So out of curiosity, how many people have you facilitated this with? You know, you say you do individuals, you do groups, you know, like, and I would imagine that it's increasing the amount of people that want to do this. Like, so I would imagine your business model has to expand sometime in the near future.
Yeah, but we didn't do that many retreats. We had one specialized Edwin retreat. And also this year, we had one specialized retreat for therapists in training to be a psychedelic therapist. We provided them with the training experience. But normally we specialize in private sessions. And sometimes it happens that people come with a child or a friend or a partner. I know the rough number to me personally. It's well over 300, maybe 350 individual sessions.
Yeah.
But I think the business as a whole, it's going also maybe about 600 or something. So we have a whole team of extremely experienced people that we work with. You know, they have such deep knowledge by doing the medicine for themselves, you know, by really taking a leading role in being the guide, by knowing it. That is so inspiring and challenging to work with, you know, in that environment. So that is really the therapeutic psychological part of it. And then we also have the planning part of it in the company. That's all done by Joanna with her planning group. And she has all the non-therapeutic contact with clients, about information, about planning the accommodation, session dates, getting the guides and all the calls. So there's a tremendous amount of work. And this is all, this is the service that we provide in two versions.
Now, Luke, a question for you. How would a session for the therapists look in contrast to, say, somebody who's coming in to work on themselves? Like, do you tailor it a little more for the ones who are learning? What does that differentiation look like? Does it look different at all? It's more so what I'm wondering.
I think this is a really good question. I think in essence, it can look different on the outside. But if you go for leadership development and you prepare that, you have to do your homework and feel where you'll get the layers to feel where you really get stuck and where relationships start to derail, you know, that's the focus that you're going to give it. And if it's about healing trauma, that's the focus that you can give it. And if you want to brainstorm for your company, you know, whatever you, I guess, focus on, although there are no absolutes, you can have that amplified, you know, and focus on it. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, it sounds like it's more introspection in combination with their previous education and experience in therapy.
Yeah, and also, so like with the veterans, for instance, you know, you would expect that it has a lot to do with the missions and stuff that they achieve, but it's really more about the stuff that affect them right now, you know, and that those are their kids, and their relationships, and their work, and their finances, and frustrations. So this is where I think the background and background comes into play. You know, it affects different people differently. But at the attentive setting, that's where you have to get the options.
Out of curiosity, Luke, so, you know, you've you know, you've done over 300 people, which is impressive numbers, and these veteran groups, what, and I know this is a difficult question to answer, but what appears to be the efficacy of this? You know, like, how many people walk away from this being like, this changed my life, this was a profound experience, you know? And like we talked about before, no psychedelic experience is the same, even for an individual, let alone two separate people with different problems, different neurochemistry, different life experiences. So, you know, how, what do you think that the rate of quote unquote success is with this, with people finding their problems, recognizing them? And
well, for the veterans, we had it actually measured. And I don't know all of the numbers off the top of my head, but, you know, it was very classical reflection of high dose psychedelic use. That most people rated it as the most significant events of their lives. Yeah. And that even the challenging, some have had official challenging experiences, you know, for the metrics of it. And they also rated it as it was the paramount to their healing process. Pivotal, you know, in their introspection. And it's logical, because if you have strong convictions, you know, you need more force to break. You know, well, if you want to hold on, you're going to get a tougher trip. This is really a thing with veterans. You know, it's hard to become a military man if you look at a strong will. So I learned, also the hard way, that with veterans or military people or first responders, often, yeah, you need a higher dose because they can just force more control. And if that is the slower response instead of the surrender, yeah, you need a higher dose. So the surrender part becomes less of an issue, you know. So we take the protocols also with the veterans to accommodate it.
So the change in protocol, is that just an increase of the medicine itself or the psilocybin?
Yeah. And the relevant preparation, you know. So for some, it's really a tailored talk that you have with a person, but also their expectations based on their experiences, because most people only know alcohol, you know, sometimes weed. With a psychedelic experience, it's often, you know, like very different. So it is mentioned that the only side effect is like anxiety. That is true, and you can navigate that and you can mitigate that. But that is different for everyone. So everyone's going to fall back to their own inner child neurology, you know, when you're completely vulnerable and exposed and without your defenses in a trip.
You know, I think it's really interesting that you said too, one of the side effects, because I feel like segments of the media are presenting psychedelics as just magic pill that cures everything. But, you know, I think it's more of a tool, right? Like you're taking this psychedelic and it's showing you your faults. You don't actually have to change if you don't want to. You know what I mean? Like it's sort of opening this box and allowing you to view objectively into yourself and then actually visualize and experience, like you were saying too, seeing of a, you know, a second person perspective of yourself being a dick. And I'm like, I totally get that concept of like being made aware of my behavior to my ex and how it was affecting people. But it doesn't necessarily mean that I need to change, and that psychedelics are a tool, a very powerful, powerful tool, but require respect and the preparation and integration afterwards. But also the fact of the potential side effects. And you're talking about anxiety. Like I've talked to quite a few people that have done higher dose psychedelics, psilocybin, 5-MeO-DMT, and then have crippling anxiety for weeks or months. And it's, you know, and I think that needs to be made aware to people before they engage in this, is that once you open this box up, it almost takes a considerable amount more effort and dysfunction to close it.
Yeah.
And so you have to ride this out and develop new coping mechanisms, you know, different ways of dealing with this, because we're all stressed out all the damn time. And, you know, maybe drinking or yelling at people is not the best way to deal with it. And so you know, it's sort of interesting how this medicine is being projected in the media. And I really appreciate that you guys are looking at this in a way that seems very responsible to me. And
I was going to say, I really appreciate that you talk a lot about how you're talking about not just the setting, but like setting them up properly for success with having these conversations and acknowledging that, like, especially the veterans might require that extra conversation and that difference in threshold because of their ability to really hold on, to be in control and not release from that. So it's not just like you're giving somebody these medications, these psychedelic chemicals and just saying, okay, hopefully this works. Pull your chute. Yeah. So this is, I like how responsible this sounds, honestly.
Yeah. Well, actually we took the middle way actually, out of the, because the government categorized the truffles as food. When we set up this research, obviously we paid an independent researcher to measure the results, you know. But it's still, you know, the baker, you know, researching, you know, bread, you know. So to try to create some distance. So this is what we've done. And this is the thing, the truffles have the EU food safety certification.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's food, it's safe, and water is more deadly. You know, you can't overdose, it's not toxic, and neither is it addictive. And that's why it's all, you know, it shows. That sounds completely ridiculous. But so for this reason,
it's more regulated than a psychedelic.
Yeah. For this reason, I hired a food scientist and to develop the program. We got in touch with a neuroscientist that wanted to measure the results, crunch the data. She prepared the surveys. There was screening involved. And but then there was no official follow-up, you know. We just prepared them for the session. We didn't give them any therapy before, and we didn't give them any therapy after. But just having a safe setting, having two experiences and people to talk to, without official, you know, the normal psychological therapy behind it, you know, that wasn't the case. And with those settings, we have resolved the PTSD, depression drops by 30%.
You know, that's a significant amount considering that the current methods don't really do anything.
No, now, I mean, yeah, anxiety dropped by 80, like 80 for the first couple of weeks.
80%.
Like that was completely cold. You know,
was it prolonged? Like, you know, like things like with ketamine, you have about a 1 month of efficacy, so to speak. Now with the psilocybin experiences, is this a long lasting thing, or is it more like, okay, I've chipped away at this. I got to go back in and work again, chip this out, and then just continue.
Well, for most people, they are mind blown by the experience, you know, and some, you know, say, well, oh my God, the best experience of my life. I'll never do that again, you know? But then a couple of days later, you know, you think it's very valuable, but it's always a lot of work. And the resistance to it, it's real. You know, you don't want to take psychedelic. You know, you're going to have to look yourself in this eternal mirror, and you're going to see all the stuff that you've been hiding from, you know? So in a sense, you know, you have to feel very vulnerable. And it's normal that you feel that resistance when you're taking it.
You know, it's funny. Like, I've done a considerable amount of psychedelics in my lifetime, and I'm always a little bit apprehensive. You know what I mean? Because I know what I'm getting into. I am very aware of what's about to happen. And you're right. Like, there's something to be said about being vulnerable. You know, I can be vulnerable to a partner, to a friend, and if I'm rejected, I can just walk away, forget that ever happened, bury it really deep, and move on. But if you're vulnerable to yourself, you really have nowhere to run. And there's some very interesting things that you're confronted with about ideas of self-worth and shame and fear and inadequacy. And, you know, I guess at the end of the day, we all just want to be loved and accepted. And then all the reasons why we feel that we're not worthy of that or have a tendency to come up in these experiences. And, you know, and again, for the people listening, you know, like it's, psychedelics are not a recreational drug. You know, smaller amounts, they can be used in a sense of enjoying yourself in a microdose as a stimulant. But when you start getting into these psychedelic doses, you know, you're very much exploring parts of yourself that you probably spend the better part of your life finding reasons not to. And, you know, and again, like I was saying, I appreciate the approach that you guys are taking and the integration that follows and even subsequent afterwards, because I think that's important. And one other thing too, I read in your webpage is that say tomorrow I do a massive amount of psychedelics at my home somewhere else and I need to talk to someone for integration. You guys also offer external integration where?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. We actually had it off the website for a while, but we recently put it up again. So actually people can benefit of the experience that our guides have. Because our guides do the integration with the clients, of course. You know, they be together, you know, through these immense life transforming processes, you know. So there's often a very deep bond, you know, that carries on. So that's how the integration really works, very personal. And it's with the guides that they meet in the call before the session.
So I have another question for you too. So as we're seeing seemingly the whole world or portions of the Western world sort of rally around psychedelics as a mechanism for treating, you know, the opioid crisis, treating this mental health crisis that's affecting us, you know, how do you see this rolling out in Europe? You know, like I know Canada, I think we're being proactive about it, heavy with regulatory issues, but at the same time, I don't think that's necessarily bad. I think we're moving steps forward. Now, in the European Union, you know, other than this interesting little loophole about psilocybin being a food, you know, how do you see this rolling out? Like, do you see being able to use different psychedelic compounds and integrating them into your ceremonies and processes? Or is this something that's perhaps over the horizon right now?
That's a very big question. Look, we're I think the limitation that we have to work with psilocybin truffles is a real blessing. I think what keeps people safe is that it's illegal to process, so it doesn't wind up in chocolates, so no kid eats it and winds up in the hospital, or you know, this doesn't exist. You know, officially, you're not even allowed to make tea of it. You know, you're not allowed to dry it either. So. And I think that keeps people safe. If I theoretically could use 5-MeO-DMT, I don't know if I would, you know, even if I had qualified people to do so. It has a completely different experience. I respect it. I've done it twice. It always has a vague legal status, you know, that you might consider it legal or not in the books. And I think what we see with psilocybin is real magic, you know, like we in the last retreat, we see a guy that has walked with a cane at 13, you know, at 4 back operation. He's now at 30. He's never had a day without pain in his back. And during a session where people are holding their hands, you know, during a psychedelic session on his back, he feels the healing taking place. And after that, you know, he died for hours and until the day he's completely pain-free and the truffles told him, you know, that he needed to be in service. And then it would stay that way. You know, like, you can't make that up, you know?
No. I totally understand that. And you know what? I'll follow that story with my own anecdote just to say, like, I legitimately believe that is I had crippling back pain for the better part of 10 years to a point where I didn't think that I could even be a paramedic anymore. Like, just unbelievable. And when I was doing my Ibogaine experience, I was letting go of all this stuff and I could feel these muscles relaxing in my pelvis. And the next day, I've never had back pain since. And again, that's not across the board cure for back pain, but I think it's also that we recognize that a lot of the issues that we have, whether it's hypertension, back pain, any number of things, is caused by internalized stress. Like stress is a a very, very destructive, you know, physical process that really breaks us down. So, you know, I find that fascinating that that's some of the results that you're having. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think stress is the cause that underlies everything almost. You know, it's called disease or reason, you know, and the longer exposure to cortisol and stress, you know, it's shaping your neurology, it's shaping how you release chemicals that make you feel a certain way. I think this is really at the basis for the reality on the ground in Europe is that everyone can get in the EU pretty much truffles in the mailbox, you know, especially microdosing truffles. You know, there's a package in one of those, and they are considered legal food in Netherlands. The reality is that it's shipped all up here.
So that's really fascinating. I didn't know that. So that theoretically, with the appropriate exposure, publicity, and government acceptance, currently with the legislation in the EU, is that almost the entire population could be microdosing on psilocybin.
I think so. I think that's the case. My business partner is the one producing the truffle, you know, fresh mushrooms, the vanilla, I think. And they ship it through their sales channels, you know, like online smart shops. They send it all over the EU, I think.
So, Luke, out of curiosity, so let's just say that someone here wants to experience, you know, a controlled environment, a psilocybin experience. Now, would they just go on to psychedelicinsights.com? Is there, you know, they can send an email, they can have a phone number, they can call someone?
Yeah, so on the website, there's hopefully enough info, and then we invite people to book a call. But it's pretty much one button on the website, and that's just to book a free introduction call with us. And then, you know, then we'd love to hear your personal story, your knowledge, your experience with psychedelics, where you are, what you want to gain or lose from such an experience. And then we explain everything about ourselves and the cannabis. So that's really the start of the psychedelic adventure.
No, that's amazing. So, Luke, I just want to say, I really appreciated talking to you today. I think that was actually a fantastic recording. And yeah, you know, both Jason and I were saying, you know, I feel that you're doing this in a responsible way. And I think a very big issue that we're going to be facing in this is, I like to call them backyard shaman, where you have these guys who, you know, did some mushrooms and now all of a sudden they want to make it, you know, even if it's an economic benefit or just simply that they feel the need to share it, that it is something that's dangerous. So for those people who want to do this, and they want to have a safe environment, just, you know, do your research, you know, find a company like Psychedelic Insights that does this properly and that your best interests are, you know, are being looked for.
Yeah, I think a lot of people who have questions about psychedelics in general typically are hesitant about the reintegration piece. And I think you bridging that gap is important, especially even just offering it as an individual piece to your company, so that if somebody does use psychedelics and they're having difficulty reintegrating, they can reach out to you if they're in the area. And I think that's really important and incredible work that you're doing.
Well, I will say on top of that too, is that I've talked to a lot of people and their biggest hesitancy with using psychedelics is not being able to function afterwards, in the sense of will I be able to do my job? Will I be able to, you know, function in the way and be a parent, be a brother, sister, whatever it is. And it's sort of interesting that you said, you know, you were doing a job, and I've heard this line of story before where you were working in finance and developing companies, and then obviously you do a bunch of ayahuasca and you're like, I'm getting on my boat, I'm sailing around the damn world and I'm going to figure some stuff out. And now here you are. So it's, you know, it's funny that, you know, I like to tell people, I'm like, no, you'll be fine. But it's like, well, not necessarily. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, where you end up is where you need to be.
Yeah. I mean, I had a great life. I can say this, you know. I was privileged. I had a safe, fun childhood. It was quite international. You know, I was always healthy, was good at sports, you know, was not excelling at academics. So logically, I'll find a way to play outside, you know, in the military. And, you know, and having this, you know, even though it was in places, confidence, you know, going into the world, you know, it enabled me to be rather fearless and not at least not afraid to fail, to just follow my heart, to do an immense amount of actually living and exploring. And I've done mountaineering, ocean sailing, and, you know, and all of a sudden, I enter the world that has other dimensions. You know, I'm laughing at my own story. You know that I'm here, that I'm telling people, you know, about other dimensions and entities.
It took a bit to get to that point. You have these experiences, and like I started doing psychedelics like 10 years ago, not far off you, and I was kind of like, I want to tell people about this, but at the same time, I'm like, it's, you know, it's a little sci-fi. It's a little culty. It's a whole number of things all wrapped together. And, you know, it's nice that we're now sort of in a cultural environment where we can have these conversations and no, it's really impressive. And so out of curiosity, Luke, do you want to plug anything? Do you have any, you know, you were talking about that veterans video. Is there anything that you want to talk about or make available to our viewers or anything?
Well, I'm working on a new veteran project. When it's ready, it's going to be on our website, but that's the crowdfunding. It's probably going to be a collaboration with some well-known other veteran organizations that I'm talking to try and involve them. And if we all co-promote it, you know, and it gets off the ground, that we already secured research via London and I've talked with the Dutch Ministry of Defense to get involved, do research, and have it with the public. But for everyone who is curious, well, for 1,000 different reasons, we were exploring psychedelics, natural psychedelics that are proven to be safe medically, where we can be there, you know, for the psychological part. To guide you through the entire process, and if you want to talk about it, then our door is open. It costs you nothing. We are happy to invest in the relationship and explain how we do things. Because for many people, it's a life changer, and for us, this is the most valuable time that most valuable work that we can do. So that is our mission, you know, and we're not selling it; we're keeping people safe. Rejecting them constructively, because it's also not for everyone. But we have the website to wait for, and we're here for you if you want to call.
All right, that's amazing. Thank you for your time, Luke. And like I said, if you want to check out the webpage, like there's a lot of information on there, psychedelicinsights.com. And yeah, check it out. There's a bunch of really interesting videos. The veteran video is fantastic. It actually made me super emotional when I was watching it. So yeah, it's very well done. And check it out. And thank you for your time, Luke. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Love the luck, guys. Take a look.
I'll talk to you later, man. Bye.